Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in hell.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on that cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doc, you homie. Fuck that. Black dude, holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker. Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I know it's wild to hear me on this, and I guess this is what it'll be again for a minute or whatever. One more time.
Oh, shit!
All right, so let's just get right to the everything, man. We got a lot to talk about here today. You know, I got so much bad shit going on. It's ridiculous. And, you know, I wanted to do this mainly as an avenue to just talk about some other shit. Just get my mind off of whatever and talk about shit that don't really matter to me as much. Of course, I'll talk about all the actual factual, all the shit that's going on in my life. But, you know, the wrestling, you know, I take very, very lightly. I don't respect a lot of things that go on in it, especially on the independent circuit. It's the thing I used to be a big, big fan of. You know, I spent every single month traveling to Philly. Every month I'd go to Philly. Well, started off in Jersey, and we'd go to CZW, and it was, you know, leaving work early or taking the day off, depending on it, because, you know, some were doubleheaders, some were straight up, so mostly leaving early, going there. I had Sunday off, so even being up late was, you know, was what it was, but you know, and I spent over a decade doing that. So I really, really loved independent wrestling. There was so much of it that I really clung to. Part of it was my own immaturity, honestly. No one wants to hear that shit. But, you know, when you live amongst the life of drinking and drugs and the party atmosphere all the time, it's immature. It's just, that's just what it is. You know, when you get to be a grown man or woman and you have children and an actual life, I mean, you can have parties, you can go to parties and stuff like that, but the more that it is who you are through and through, it's a problem. And, you know, that's where I found myself, and I changed my life. So when it came down to my connecting with that scene anymore, it wasn't going to be a fit for me. So, it is what it is. Everybody could do what they want, but you could also be judged accordingly by whoever views you. You know, you also don't need to take anything that they say seriously. As I've always said, I'm just some jerk off from Jersey. So, you know, it is what it is. Well, first things first, why are you hearing me on here again? Okay, well, I went through tremendous financial problems and still am, and to a different extent, but I had to make the decision where I was going to cut this Blog Talk Radio off, which unfortunately meant that, I mean, I had 10 plus years of archives, hundreds upon hundreds of shows, you know, interviews with people who aren't here anymore and this, but my life stuff is just way too substantial to be like, well, but the shows, like I definitely got to the point where I couldn't give a fuck about this. I could not make this a necessity amongst, you know, my home, my animals, my children. There's no way that this becomes any kind of necessity when you have to put these things in order. But my good friend, former co-host and founder of Yakuza Kick Radio, Eric Williams, he came to the rescue of Yakuza Kick Radio, so to speak, and he said, "No, man, I can't let that happen. You know, you got too many shows. I hear you, but what's going on is not on the level of importance of podcasts. It's just not. I don't care what's on the podcast. I can't put a level of importance on it that's going to rival the things I have going on." And he said, "All right, well, look, man, like, I'm going to try to get all these shows off of that server because they're pretty much asking you, hey, pick 30 shows and then the rest, delete them, or 300, or 30 hours or some shit. I think it was 30 hours. So, yeah, shows are 2 hours, 3 hours. So, I mean, you're talking like, pick 10 shows and screw the rest of them," or something like that. And he's like, "No, man, I can't let that happen. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to pay for it, and I'll work on getting them off the server, and then I'll cancel it after that, once I have all the shows secure in some other place." Well, I guess he had issues doing that. He wasn't able to do that as fast or as whatever is possible. So he hit me up last week, and he was like, "Just so you know, man, the Blog Talk's still active, so if you ever want to do shows on there, you could do it." And I said, "Oh, shit, man." So now I felt bad because, you know, he's been paying for it for all these months, and I haven't even been doing shows on here. But I didn't know it was still active or anything. I didn't ask because I figured on the lower side, if he couldn't figure out and had to cut it off, I was just going to understand. Whether it was losing 100 shows or all of whatever, it's just where I'm at now. This can't hold that level of importance. So, you know, it is what it is, and for whatever reason, it's still active, so here I am. So I know a lot of people like this better, and honestly, including me, because I just, something about just having the mic and the headphones and just talking and not having to look at my own face on the internet, I don't think anyone wants to look at me for an hour or two. I also don't think that the same level of traffic is going to get there, because, you know, people want to enjoy podcasts on their headphones. They want to, you know, in the car driving, or in their headphones at the gym or at work or wherever you can. That's how I would consume podcasts, especially, you know, when I was working. Now I do a lot more watching my podcasts on TV because I just don't have anywhere to fucking go. So, I mean, that's why. But your average person is going to be, you know, consuming podcasts through the headphones and stuff. And, you know, I know I had a lot of people that just they weren't going to watch that YouTube thing, and the Facebook Live thing, and it is what it is. I don't, you know, hold that against anybody. I knew there was going to be positives and negatives, and there were some parts of it I liked, but I just have a different vibe on it. So so let me give you a quick rundown of some of the things that are going on with me. All right, so I had, everybody knows, I had gotten colon cancer, and they took out a foot of my colon. I started on chemo pills after that, and that was supposed to run for months. Well, I had a lot of things happen, you know, with the job where they really just went up against everything I fought for. They literally took cats that were in the cages that I cared for and put them back outside. And, you know, Baby was there for 2 years and Sadie was there for over a year. And to take them from climate-controlled areas where they're fed every single day and then force them to run around and dip and dodge predators and the weather and everything else is, I mean, beyond heartless. So it showed me the level of aggression that they were going to use towards my my passion and the things that I loved so much. I fought them very heavily, this new management. I fought them very, very heavily where I was there. And, you know, they were trying to do certain things. And I think my morality or my just being there made it where they had to pump their brakes. They couldn't just do it so free and open. They would tell flat-out lies to us, and if you were the one person in the room, it'd be like, hey, wait a minute. You know, you were just the obstacle. That's what it became, is little by little, if you had the right answers, you were now the problem. You know, the thing is, just to rehash real quick, when I started there, I worked there for 21 years, 6 days a week. So I know, you know, the end result of a lot of this stuff comes off sounding like I don't want to work or something like that. But let's just really, really keep in mind, you know, what happened previous to my cancer. Is what happened previous to my cancer was me working for 21 years, 6 days a week. And you know, quite a few times I'd work my seventh day. And if I wasn't working my seventh day, believe me, my mind was full of everything that was going on at work on my seventh day, whether I was there or not. There was no cutting ties and just going home and not feeling anything. There was worrying about this one and that one. 21 years ago, they were euthanizing cats left and right. And I ended up having to be the person that chose the cats to be euthanized, because when I showed up there, the manager, Rocky, he would tap a pen on the front of the cage, and if the cat didn't come up to the front of the cage, this is what he would do when there was a need for euthanasia lists. He didn't want to bother getting in touch with these cats or getting used to these cats or figuring out who was who or who was what. And he didn't have a connection with his employees that way either. So he'd walk to the front of the cage and just tap his pen on the cage, and if the cat didn't come up or the cat hissed, that was probably going to wind up on the euthanasia list. The cat gave him the wrong look, and that was it. And that cat lost its life, you know. I told him very early on when I saw that, I said, I can't deal with this. I'm going to have to go, you know, if this is how things are going here. He said, well, you know, things are going to have to happen regardless. Our cages are filling and we can't, you know, if we run out of space, we can't do anything. And I said, well, then, you know, I have to be involved in the process because I really know these cats. You know, I know if this has to be done, then, you know, I mean, someone who knows these cats is the most responsible person to make that really difficult decision. So from that point out, I was the person who had to pick the cats. So every time our capacity would fill, I'd get a call. I'd get a page to the office. We gotta do something. We gotta make a list with it, you know. And I'd have to go back there and shuffle cats around and try to figure out how I could mix and match and do things to make space, as well as having to make the smallest list that I could make to solve the situation. And I became very, very good at this and making it as least as possible. Well, over the years, you know, little by little, we really picked up momentum. And we started doing a lot of things that were really, really changing the way that things went in that building. You know, the cats that were considered to be unadoptable, they were worked with. I would work with them. I would take my bites. I would take my scratches, because at the end of that, you would find a cat that was nothing but purrs and mushes, and he or she was ready to go home. And then I would get emails and pictures of how this was these people's best friend, and a whole family just loved this cat so much, and they've never had a cat so great. This is the same cat that was on the verge of being written off, and had I not been in the place I was in, that cat was done. That cat didn't get to live, and instead, I have these glowing emails about how amazing this cat has been for their family, you know. So decades of that is what I've done. Just overall, I gave chances to every cat that came in those doors. And it's really difficult because what's being done is they're pretty much deciding, look, we don't want things on paper to go down as we're fucking this up. And, you know, we have they have a shelter in Newark, Tinton Falls, and Forked River. Forked River was where we were. We were, I would say, the best shelter out of the three by far, by like leaps and bounds. Newark was a shithole, still is a shithole. They've been in the paper, they've been in reports, they've been borderline shut down. They haven't been shut down, but they have been, you know, failed all sorts of inspections. They've been, you know, really gone after over the years for their horrible policies and massive deaths and neglects and all sorts of things. You can go look that up. The Newark shelter has a long history of all of that bullshit. But when this new CEO came in, it was his job to fix all of that, to make everything look nice on paper. Well, they came up somewhere along the line. They came up with a system that was pretty much going to say that as long as it leaves our system, we're victors. We are victorious in moving cats out of our system, dogs out of our system. For dogs, it's harder because you legitimately have to find rescues or move them to somewhere else that might euthanize them or euthanize them yourself. I mean, there's no easy option. Well, the easy option that they found for cats is if they put them back outside, if they release a cat outside, it goes into this category that's called live release rate. Live release rate is the biggest lie and the biggest, it's the worst thing that could happen to the animal industry as far as I'm concerned. And the reason I say that is because live release rate means it didn't die in their building. That's all it means. But you know what also happens is the adoptions go in the same category. So now the shelters are deeming themselves, and I was told as well, there's no difference between the cat going outside, the cat being TNR'd, or the cat going home. The cat going to a rescue where it's still looking for a home but not on our watch, or going home. Those are the same thing to them. On paper, that's the same thing. That's the only statistic they care about. So now putting a cat outside makes them winning. Because the thing is the longer you have a cat in the building, the more medical expenses you may have, the bigger chances that something may take a turn medically and the cat might pass in your care. You know, we've had to euthanize cats that took a turn and had cancer, that had this, or that had, you know, kidney failure, things that we can no longer manage. We did everything for, and, you know, heartbroken, we put the cat to sleep or we put the dog to sleep. And that had feeling behind it. None of us would have any, you know, reservations about explaining every bit of what we tried and what we did. There's no gray area there, you know. With so many of the deaths that were going on in Newark, no one wanted to talk about none of the terrible shit that was going on there. As employees where we were, we would tell you everything and every reason why that animal passed. And if you worked with transparency like that, the deaths that went down on paper wouldn't be looked at as such a negative because you knew they were heartfelt. You knew that we didn't cut any corners. We didn't bail on this animal. We did everything we could. And that just couldn't be said across the board, so they eliminated that part of the company, that it wasn't going to operate that way anymore. So, you know, when these things happen, and you know, you have, like, every single day, I would wake up, and I would have to, you know, think about this cat. Just the area I primarily cared for, because I took care of the male cat yard, so there was 21 cages and 21 cages, and we could hold up to 25 in my rooming area out there. So that was like my primary area, but also, you know, I became cat supervisor. You know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of bad things to say about me, but in the same token, like, why did they make me supervisor? Why did they make me the guy who made all the decisions about the cats if I was such, you know what I mean? So in retrospect, it just looks bad on them to begin with to disagree with everything I said, but this is what I've been saying for 21 years, and you guys sat there and nodded and went along with things. And in the end, it wasn't to the result or to the end of cats being thrown outside or euthanized by my word. It was success. But, where was I? But yeah, you know, every day I'd wake up and I'd think about every cat. The cat in cage two wasn't eating. So is it eating today? We tried tuna yesterday. I hope she ate the tuna. By the time I get in there, man, I hope a little chunk of that tuna's gone. Okay, in the hospital, I had this other cat crashing with Khaleesi virus. And, you know, I've seen this before, and I'm just hoping, he starts to make a positive turn today. I'm going to go in. I'm going to give him fluids. I'm going to force feed him, go check on the cat in cage two in the other area. There's another cat that's been really, really touchy, kind of violent. I got to go make sure I move that cat for someone so no one gets hurt. And then little by little, that stops needing to be the case because the cat continues to make progress the more we buy it time and the more the employees continue to work with them. You know, and I had such a fantastic crew that they all followed the same pattern of caring about everything that was in that building and doing everything they can for them and checking in with me if they needed help with something. So it just had such a great flow and a genuine, heartfelt message and mission to help every cat there. And we worked our asses off for that. And in a blink, because I got cancer, they were able to just completely bulldoze that. And, you know, you got to also think about it, too, because they could say what they want to say about the cats that they threw outside. But, you know, these are cats that were my projects. You know, these were cats that took a long time for me to get them to trust me. And then one day I just disappeared, and I was gone for months and months on end. I had no choice. I had zero options to be anywhere else but where I was. So it's real strange to then later judge the cats months down the road and be like, these cats haven't made any progress. They killed Jubilee. They threw Baby and Sadie outside. You know what I mean? These are things that they did instead of understanding, these cats just lost their six-day-a-week caretaker. They're probably going to regress some. So we really need to buy them time. So he can get himself healthy and he can get himself back. But when the barrage of news came in of this negative and that negative and this is going and now they want to move this and all da da, you know, and I'm hearing from employees like, we missed you, like I'm going to come back and just like stand up against and fix all of this shit. Like there's no way for me to do that. They hit the gas so hard when I went out that policies, they made sure that things didn't operate in the same fashion. So I would be re-entering a new establishment. I had to cut ties. I had no choice. I couldn't think one time, you know, with the rain and all of this other stuff going on outside and the cold coming, I couldn't think about anything but those cats' lives. So this is what took me out of there. And you could agree with me, you could disagree with me. I know a lot of people disappeared, and I don't know why, and I don't fucking care anymore. I got to be straight up honest with you, because when it comes down to it, my intentions are very fucking pure. If anyone's ever listened to this show, one thing everybody will say is Jay just tells it like it is. Jay just says what he feels and how he feels. He's really going to give you like the straightforward on what he feels shit is. So he's not going to mince words. He's not going to lie to you or beat around the bush about this or that. No, man, like this is what it is. So I can't try to figure out why this person bailed on me or why this person bailed on me. And I know that there's some people who just don't understand the connection with animals. That I get, too, because I've heard words from some of these same, like, well, I love animals too, but come on. Come on, your mother. I don't give a fuck about what you're talking about right now. You know what I mean? So if you want to cut it off at a certain level, cool. Don't tell me. I ain't got shit to do with your problems, bro. Because when it comes down to me, I've dedicated my life to cats. That's what I've done. My middle name ain't just for show. My fucking stripes ain't just for show. This is my life. This is who I am. And if you don't like me, you know what I mean? You're most likely not going to tell me in person, so what the fuck do I care about your long-distance bullshit? Long-distance shade, and you're going to tell your other little dickhead friends about me. Go fuck yourself, you know what I mean? Grow a set of balls, come over here, punch me in my motherfucking face. You won't. So outside of that, go fuck yourself, you know what I mean? So, anyway, that's, you know, obviously the beginning of everything. Well, so when I lost my job, when I resigned, I lost my insurance. I lost thing. I had nothing. Right. So that first GoFundMe that went up came on the heels of that. It came on the heels of me not having shit and not having money to pay the bills or anything like that. I got a mortgage. I got, you know, the phone. My phone. Cable and the electric and the water sewer every quarterly, you know what I mean? So, all the other shit is monthly. So, I had a lot, man, and, like, you know, my wife, she works at an emergency vet clinic. She works very hard and works a lot of hours. She's built herself up to, you know, a better wage than I made in 21 years, and I'm very proud of her for that, you know what I mean? But I was still paying the lion's share of the bills all the way up, even with the GoFundMe. And then what happened after that is I cashed out my 401k because that was something else that was in the, that was available to me. So I cashed out my 401k. That allowed me to pay bills as normal, as the same, like as if I had a job still and everything was going well. Following the GoFundMe, I had that, and because that, you know, took time to cash out anyway, so I was still beat in between point A and point B, plus Nina had crashed the car and needed a new vehicle, and that was all tied together, everything just one after another. So I had to abandon treatment because of the thing. I had no insurance, so I cashed out the 401k, and that allowed me to pay the bills like normal, or my portion of the bills, until October. Well, in October, I had to turn all the bills over to my wife, and I thought everything was going well. I was given the impression everything was going well, and I found out 2 days before my birthday that the house is in foreclosure. And that, you know, we owed a lot of money that we had to get back fast. So now I have, like, this coming Monday, we're going to be able to call the mortgage company. We're going to be given the figure. And then we have to have that paid by the following Monday. And that's what I'm up against right now. So you're going to see another GoFundMe that's, involving my family. I believe Nina's friend's going to launch one, and you'll be seeing that. And if you, if you want to support, great, I appreciate you. If not, and you want to share, tell somebody who you think might give a fuck, then, like, I appreciate you, you know. And again, you could also take the stance and talk shit behind my back, but that's where you're going to stay. That's exactly where you're going to stay. You're going to stay behind my back in the sense that you won't say it to my face. You're going to stay behind my back in the sense of you're behind me. I'm moving forward past this. I have to continue to gain positivity and momentum and continue to gather people around me. They're going to make me my better self. They're going to continue to support me being my better self and the things that I do. They're going to continue to cherish those as this guy is doing things that are good. Like, this isn't some shithead. He isn't running around on fucking dope or pills or this or that, you know. July, I'll be sober 11 years. Like, through all of this shit that I've gone through here, you know how many motherfuckers would have just ran off back to the fucking liquor store and started drowning their shit again? You know, again, this isn't me just trying to pat myself on the back, but for the people who hate on me and try to, you know, diminish what I do or oh, yeah, this fucking asshole, and, you know. I mean, I don't give a fuck about you. I'm not going to be, you know, going through what you're up to in life the way that you're going through what I'm up to in life. So, you know, it is what it is. And like I said, I leave it all behind me because I got way too much shit to focus on to be worried about who isn't with me. You know what I mean? I focus heavily on who is with me. And that's who I'm bringing. That's who we going with. You know? And like I said, it has nothing to do with, you know, whether you financially contribute or not. There's plenty of people who support me that don't financially or can't financially contribute to me. That is not a requirement to be close to me or my friend or someone I value at all. So don't confuse what I'm saying that way. It's not like that. But the motherfuckers who's hating and on some bullshit, mumbling their shit to their people, they know who the fuck they are. So anyway, that happened. And then, you know, not to be, you know, we don't like to solve things, or we don't like to just limit things to one problem. So then, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, one of my cats, Ernie, he's just about the head of the household. I mean, my Leo is, I consider, king, but Ernie is definitely, he's the life of the party. That guy is everywhere all the time. He's always in your business. He's my little baby gorilla. That's the guy named after the gorilla from the Bronx Zoo. And so a couple nights ago, all of a sudden noticed, or a couple mornings ago, I should say, my wife noticed he's in and out of the litter box. He's in and out of the litter box. I'm like, fuck. You could tell, like, you know, when they go like that and it keeps going, something's going on or something's up that they can't. So she checked him out. His bladder's full and it's hard. So she brings him to work with her. You know, and luckily, you know, being in the situation that we are, you know, thank God, I mean, she works where she works and was able to just go in there with him because, you know, he had some urinary blockage. We were able to flush it out. She tried to bring him home the other night. Didn't go well. Because, you know, we know the ins and outs and the medical stuff and stuff like that. It's a little bit easier to home care, you know, some things and save yourself, like, the overnight stay and stuff like that. But he had pulled out everything. Like, he came home. He had a cone on because he was flowing pretty well. And he had eaten before he left there. So Nina had a good hopes that he would be, you know, okay, you know, and be able to just kind of work it out, you know, from that point. Brought him home on fluids, brought him home still with the urinary catheter, and we were just going to set him up in the crate overnight. He had the cone, all of that. I mean, I'm up till 3 in the morning, so I saw him, everything was fine and everything like that. And then, like, wake up in the morning, his fucking urinary catheter's out, his fucking... His fluids are out, cones off. It's just like, and he just didn't, he didn't respond well. Like, he was laying around a lot yesterday, and we made the decision to bring him back. So he's hospitalized now. Doing very, very well, though. Got reports today that he's eating well, and they flushed a lot of grit out of his bladder and everything, and for whatever reason. So he's going to have to be on a prescription diet now, you know, when we get him back home. You know, the whole crew's on science diet, too, so it's not like everybody's eating garbage food or anything like that. You know, I pride myself on feeding my animals properly, you know what I mean? So it's just one of those things, you know. And male cats, I mean, I've always owned male cats all these years, and I've never had a blockage, and male cats are known for blockages. So, of course, the first one that we get is going to be right now in the worst possible time. So it's just another thing going on. And it just is, you know, life is what you have dealt to you, and you just got to fucking work with it. So, that's kind of what's going on with me. As far as some of the what's coming up, what I got. So I did get health insurance. I did get state health insurance. It only took them a year. So if you work for a couple decades and then you get cancer and then you have a fucking mental breakdown, like, the state's going to go, yeah, we'll get back to you in like a year. That's pretty much where you're at. So I have, I've been back to the doctor since. I have a upcoming scan at the end of the month, so I'll get my body scanned and see if there's any tumors or any kind of anything like that. I have to go in early next month for a colonoscopy, that whole thing. I have to, then I have earlier this month, I think it's the 20-something, but I have to go for disability and go and find out if I qualify mentally for disability. And because I found through this trauma and the things that I went through, it's presented me with these different like things that I've had, and I've never had these in the past, you know, like I can't be in close quarters with people, like real close quarters, like if I'm in like a crowded area, like if I'm in a hall, like in a supermarket in an aisle, and like one too many people getting that fucking space, or I get like 2-3 people in a row, excuse me, and I feel like I can't move anywhere, I'm just in the way everywhere, like I fucking, like, I get like a pain in my eye and shit, I start to like black out. It's fucking, like, I've never had that before. Like, I'm super paranoid a lot. And, you know, things like that, like, these things are going to make it really, really hard for me to just go get a job, you know? So there's a lot of mental hurdles I'm really, really dealing with on a daily basis. The depression, the anxiety, all of this stuff is just compounded into a very, very hard to manage situation. So even if it's a temporary thing and, you know, I start going through these channels to get the help mentally, I, you know, again, it's not a matter of me just being like, oh, I don't want to work. Believe me, this situation that I'm in now where I'm just home every day of the week and I have no actual plans in my life is destroying me. And this is another layer of the things that go on with me mentally. So I'm doing my best, but it's not very impressive on paper. I could tell you that much, just because what I did previous didn't leave much room for this. Didn't leave much time for sitting around and things like that. And this is a lot of that. So this is very foreign to me, very very awkward, and yeah, I don't like it at all, and I just need to be able to get on some kind of system here where I get another income so we can make sure that we keep this home. And this means too much to me and my family and my animals and everything. So it's just where I'm at. So that's what I got coming up. Other than that, I don't know. So yeah, you know, I wanted to get into this shit and I wanted to do this show. I know I talked for a while now about just me, but I want to do this show so much so because I just want to talk about all this shit that I don't really give a fuck about. Because this wrestling shit is silly as hell to me. And some of the lengths that a lot of them are going to at this point, to me, is just like pathetic type shit. And again, if it does it for you, good. It doesn't do it for me, and I'm going to tell you why. This is what the show is. This is all it is. This isn't a movement where I'm starting to, you know, turn the crowd against you. I ain't even there, bruh. Yeah, I mean, so everybody feel how you feel about what I got to say, but this is just how I feel. When I look at this shit from the outside and what I've seen and what I like to see as far as wrestling goes, you know, I could tell you what I feel, you know, and that's how it's always been here, so for what it is. I want to talk about the Hall of Fame, the Independent Hall of Fame, as it were. Well, this year, it only really interests me if some of my favorites are in there. And Whack Packer Hogan and Trent Acid was all I needed to hear as far as this current ceremony. So I had to watch, you know, what went on and what was said, you know, with those guys going in. So, surprise to me that the very first of the night to be inducted was Trent Acid. And I, you know, I had heard that, you know, accepting is Johnny Cashmere and all of this stuff. Well, I have my thoughts on Johnny Cashmere that I will also elaborate on after this, because I know I said a lot of things on my my Facebook Live thing, but if you haven't heard it, I'll just reiterate it here. So it basically was introduced. They had Dave Prazak and MLJ doing the just hosting. Like, MLJ was going to give the induction speech for Whackpacker Hogan. This was not considered to be an induction speech when it came to Trent. They only kind of gave, like, an intro. So they gave an intro, and then they played a clip, you know, a highlight reel of, you know, clips, videos, pictures, all of that stuff. And that, the video picture clips were great. After that, Johnny comes up, you know, obviously tears in his eyes, to be expected, and doesn't really have a fucking speech as far as I'm concerned. All he did was thank a bunch of people, mostly people in the room. Obviously, you know, a lot of people that weren't in the room too, but pretty much thanked a bunch of people and then left. And that was it. And that was like the whole thing for Trent was that. There wasn't, like, you know, I have to compare it to like Toby Klein. When Toby Klein inducted Brain Damage into the Deathmatch Hall of Fame, you know, same company that does the thing, GCW. He gave stories. He gave heartfelt. You know, it had meaning to it. There was something, not just a bunch of thank yous. Thank the SAT. Thank the Briscoes. Thank Mama and Papa Briscoe drove us, and we were in the car, and boy, that's a lot to deal with. And da 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 da. And that was Johnny's speech. It was just thank this one, thank that one, thank this one, thank that one. And boy, and then thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, and the thing is like, first off, as far as I'm concerned, he's disingenuous about all of it. He might feel that way about some things or whatever, but I got to be specific in saying that, like, the John Zandig thing, bro, like, you went out of your fucking way to burn bridges with John Zandig. John Zandig hated fucking Johnny Cashmere. Johnny Cashmere hated John Zandig. There got to a point where they couldn't deal anymore. Johnny Cashmere thought he was the fucking, he was the mastermind of all wrestling. And that's why he convinced Trent, let's get the fuck out of here. Let's start our own shit. And I remember the silly look on his face when he's like, you guys are coming, right? And I'm like, no, we're here. We're CZW. Like, we didn't want y'all to leave here. Oh, no, it's going to be so much better. You don't understand. Like, no, you can't just fucking start a new company and be better than the thing that's got a whole lot of momentum and identity behind it. And they didn't. But I just want to go back to the Hall of Fame thing, and then I'll get back into Johnny and the PWU shit, because that's a big part of the problem I have with him. So it just wasn't, there was no substance to it. There was nothing. He was the opener of the night. And in that time, and a lot of people will tell you that, and there's in the WWE and the AEW and stuff that'll tell you, he was the inspiration for them. He was the reason why he was the measuring stick. People saw what Trent was accomplishing on the indies and said, oh man, like that's star power right there. Like that dude right now would be making millions upon millions of dollars. He had the charisma alone to sell himself on TV, no problem. And, you know, obviously, because of the things he got caught up in, it didn't give him that opportunity. You know, the world of TV wrestling really opened up for the independents, and they've taken everything that holds value. You're not going to stay on the indies too long before someone up top gives you a shot now. And if you have the ability to really sell that product that is you, you're going to skyrocket. And Trent, I mean, no question about it, would have, you know. So for him to just be like the opener, and like they started it off even saying like, you know, with this thing about Philly, because they're in Philly for WrestleMania, we're really going to spotlight Philly athletes and da-da-da. Yeah, cool. Well, Tremble's the fucking king of Philly. You know, there was no question about it. While he was on his fucking run, that early 2000s fucking run, nobody was better than Trent Acid in Philadelphia. Just wasn't. So, you know, it's upsetting to see him get almost nothing, and now he's just in there, and it is what it is, and that's that. Where I do have to give credit, and this may be the only time you ever hear me give MLJ credit, because I do not like that fucking guy. And I got to give him credit for the Whackpacker Hogan speech, because that's what I wanted for Trent. That's what I wanted for Trent, was something heartfelt, stories, some talking about him, some talking about things he said and things he would do and da-da-da-da-da, you know. And then his sister and brother came up and accepted the plaque. And even they had more to say about their brother than Johnny had to say about Trent, in my opinion. Definitely, I give credit to everybody involved in the Whackpacker Hogan induction, and completely dropped the ball on the Trent induction for Johnny. Now, here's why I have a bigger problem with Johnny. Number one, because the way that he's conducted this whole shit with these new backseat kids and whatnot, it's not like I have such an attachment to the backseat boys that I like say, well, no one could be backseat boys again. It's not really that. It's the cornball midlife crisis bullshit way that Johnny Cashmere's drugged this thing out. The fact that he literally went to fucking Trent Acid's fucking grave, Mike Verdi's grave, his actual grave, the guy, like, in real life dead, so he could pretend have him vouch for the new backseats. Had a fake hypothetical conversation with him about giving his blessing to these new backseats. And I just thought it was tasteless. I thought it was absolutely tasteless and garbage. You know, Johnny disappeared for over fucking 10 years. I think 13 years he was gone from professional wrestling. And when Trent died, he didn't try to continue any kind of backseat anything. He started Vanilla Man Candy with Matt Walsh. And then Matt Walsh ran fucking screaming from the professional wrestling business soon after that. He did just became not a professional wrestler anymore. Like, this is the shit that, like, Johnny was up to. And now all of a sudden he's got these new backseat kids, you know, and it's like, all right, fine, but in the same token, why does Trent need to be such a part of this that he has no option in that. He has no choice in that. You're just going to keep dragging his name around. And the only people it's even going to register with is people like me, people who were actually fans back then, because I hate to break the fucking news to you, but these new fans, these 20-something-year-old fans, don't give a fuck about who Trent Acid was, because that was a long time ago. I have people that I get in these fucking discussions on these rap pages and shit. Go tell one of these motherfuckers about 90s rap. They'll be like, okay, old man, who gives a shit about your old music? Bro, we're talking about Nas and Redman and shit. You ain't Jay-Z and fucking Biggie and all this. They're like, fuck out of here with that old shit. You think fucking an independent wrestler from Philadelphia off of drugs, you think that guy is going to get fucking fans popping? Like new fans popping because you brought his name up in a promo? It can only be disrespectful to people who care. Because the people who care aren't going to pop for that. Oh my God, I'm so into these fucking 22-year-old fucking kids or whatever the fuck age they are. Because he said that Trent said it was okay. Like, what the fuck? You're talking to 40-year-olds, bro. That's who you're talking to, because that's what you are. You're in your mid-40s. You know? So I got a problem with that, and it's not just because of that. Well, and also, when he started this SPO wrestling, which, again, Johnny, so fucking out of touch of wrestling, had no idea that the year before that he started SPO wrestling, there was a ref who was beloved in this area. I mean, he was all over the place, you know, more from, you know, Mid-South. But he became very beloved on the East Coast through the companies he was working with over here. And he died, and then you start up something that has nothing to do with him with the same letters because you're that out of touch. You know what I mean? So that, but right on the head of the first poster, the Backseat Boys and H.C. Loke present SPO Wrestling. And I immediately jumped all over those fucking posts. And I don't think it's up top anymore. I don't know, because I can't say that I have, like, current, like, a subscription to anything that they got going on. But I don't think that they have that on top of their posters anymore. But I deflated, and I was like, yo, like, I don't know why the Backseat Boys present, because Trent can't present anything right now. He can't be presenting things. You know, why does it not say the Carnage Club presents? Carnage Club presents. Oh, that's right, because DeVito would have to sign off on that and say, "Oh, the Carnage Club." Yeah, that's the Carnage Crew. I kept saying club, the Carnage Crew. You know, they would have to sign off on that. Well, only one of them is really involved with the company, so you'd have to talk to him. Well, luckily for Johnny, Trent's gone, so you could just sign his name to whatever now, right? Stop it, dude. Johnny Cashmere, formerly of the Backseat Boys, and H.C. Loke, formerly of the Carnage Crew, present. And if you wanted to mention their names in there, that's your opportunity, is phrasing it like that. You can't. Like, fucking all those years after after Hawk died, did Animal go around? I mean, yeah, he did a little Road Warrior thing with fucking Heidenreich. But he didn't go, like, the Road Warriors present. The original Road Warriors present, and then did, like, conventions and shows and shit. Yeah, you know what I mean? Because to me, that would be shitty. To me, that would be totally shitty. Now, why do I have such a chip on my shoulder about Johnny Cashmere using Trent's name? I mean, after all, he was his tag team partner and everything, right? Well, the problem I have is I believe the path that he led Trent down led to his death. Now, I don't believe that there was any malicious intent as far as what Johnny did, but I believe he put him in danger, and I don't believe, well, I know for a fact Trent didn't make it out of that danger. Because at the time, and, you know, keep in mind, I mean, I'm no personal friend to any of these people. I'm no close, you know, I'm no relative. I'm not trying to overinflate my importance or whatever as a fan. But I did talk to the two of them on pretty much a monthly basis. Sometimes I talked to them before the show, during the intermission, and after the show again. We were, as far as wrestlers and fans go, we were very close. You know, I met them in the Tom's River Indie shows that they were doing, and they specifically, Johnny, led me to CZW. Said, you got to go check this out. Well, you know, once I got to know these guys, you'd know that, like, Johnny seemed like he was the more put-together guy, like, maturity-wise. Trent was just like a wild kid who was just all over the place, was just, you know, he was like the Bugs Bunny of the two, you know. He was just the trickster. He was just going to be just all over the place. I mean, that's the best way I could put it, I guess. I don't know if I'm doing that any justice, but that's the same energy that brought you the charisma that, as far as I'm concerned, made him the star that he was. That's what set him apart. That's what made him so special, is because he had this spark. He had this extra, you know what I mean, as far as his energy, his charisma, his delivery. It was just going to be a lot, and that helped him in his profession of wrestling. But Trent very much needed a father figure. He needed somebody who can kind of keep him in check. Donnie B was one of those, you know, but Donnie started running less and less. And he went from Big Buck Promotions, and then he had Phoenix Championship Wrestling. But that just really didn't last that long. And when he was in CZW, John Zandig was undoubtedly one of his father figures, Trent. You could see, you know, they had that relationship. And I'm not saying he went to him for guidance, or he went to him, you know, hey, what do I do about this problem I'm having? But there were certain people that Trent had to answer to in life, whether it had been, your John Zandigs, your Donnie B's, your Fat Franks, your this one, your that one. He had certain people that knew him, and if he came in all fucked up, or he came in off kilter, or he came in not himself, they would call him on it, and they would say, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? And from my perspective, everything that was going on with Trent was in better standing when he had those people in place. When the stardom rose and Johnny saw an opportunity, Johnny decided, we're going to go do PWU. Yeah, Trent on board, and fuck this place, fuck John Zandig, blah, 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 was all they had to say. They leave. Again, Johnny needs to go do a fucking shoot interview. So now they're doing a shoot interview, the Backseat Manifesto, where they're burying John Zandig all over it. They're in PWU. Things are all right, but now, so okay. So you take away Johnny takes away Trent's father figures. You know, he takes away some of these authoritative roles in Trent's life. Now we're our own bosses. We do our fucking thing. And you can go look at his match history. And that had him working PWU, another shindy, and Insane Clown Posse shows. That's it. JCW, I forget what the other, EWF or some shit like this. It's somewhere, you know, local, Jersey, New York, whatever, indie, PWU, and Insane Clown Posse shit. Well, within this period of time, Trent gets hooked on heroin, and he never gets out. So, although Johnny was able to handle this ride of removing John Zandig and all that, and you will remember who went back to CZW. Oh, that was Trent without Johnny. So you could say that L was his idea, or was, oh, he was just as in as me, really, because he was the guy that went back and you didn't. John Zandig was, fuck John Zandig. Two shows ago, who did you fucking bring in to whatever Berwyn, New Jersey, or wherever the fuck? John Zandig? Johnny Cashmere brought in John Zandig? And he did one fucking show for you, looked around, was like, fuck you, and no-showed your next one. Shocking. But what the fuck did you bring John Zandig in for? Because first off, it's a family show. And as I told you before, maybe you're that disconnected, but no one from fucking now is popping for a fucking 30-year-old icon. You know, it's 25 years ago. It's a long fucking time ago when John Zandig was popping. And this isn't even the time and place, because you're not bringing him to the middle of deathmatch. You know, when GCW brought him back, it was all about CZW nostalgia. It was all about, what did the CZW fans always want and never get because DJ's an idiot? And GCW just delivered. Well, John Zandig was clearly on that list, and there he is. So, it's just fucking strange. It's just really, really strange. And to me, like, that's why I don't like this guy. I don't like Cashmere. I don't like the way that he's operated since he came back. He could jump around over there at Warehouse Willie's. He could fucking, you know, he could do what he wants to do. But, I mean, this shit that he just did with Trent's speech was garbage. Guy's a shithead. That's what I think. So, that's that. Let me see. What else? All right. Got my cat on my lap now. Speaking of DJ being a dickhead. So I guess he had Jason Kelsey over there because the WrestleMania weekend, he served as a training facility for Jason Kelsey to be at, you know, while he's getting ready for this WrestleMania run-in or whatever they did. I didn't see that match. I walked away when I heard Dominic Mysterio was coming up next, and I was like, we're good. And man, DJ's gotten huge. Holy shit. And you see him next to Jason Kelsey, and, like, the fucking belly is like, holy shit, man. That is something else, man. I never thought those old workout pictures that looked like he didn't work out would ever be a goal picture for anybody, but fucking here we are. The other thing I thought that was really funny about CZW is that they have announced that they are selling tickets for TOD 5 months away. Yeah. Nobody gives a fuck about y'all anymore. Not like that. If you want to run your little family-friendly shows that you put as many black people on as possible to overshadow the fact that you're a complete creep with women in the locker room, so that way, like, when you, it looks like you have this movement and you're providing opportunities for all these people and stuff, and that's that. Those things would all be great if we didn't already knew you were DJ Hyde. We already knew you were DJ Hyde. This dude was canceled upon canceled and then was like, I got an idea. I'm going to start the movement. Like, oh, shit, this fucking guy. So, and now he's working Sunday shows in Maryland. And, you know what I mean? Get out of here. And then they're going to do shows in Love Park. Oh, that's CZW. Oh, but TOD tickets, 5 months out. As far as I'm concerned, and if you fans can't see this, then you're not that smart. But we already knew that. After all, let me see. I miss these sound drops, you know?
I think wrestling is for fucking retards.
So, 5 months out. But I think here's what it is. They're trying to get pre-sales high enough that warrants them booking big talent. And if they do, they will. They'll take a shot at Japan. They'll take a shot at this one. They'll take a shot at that one. But if pre-sales are garbage, you'll get Otis Kogar and Orin Burt and all these other people who no one else gives a shit about, and then that Shannon chick will talk about them on the internet like they're the most amazing deathmatch wrestlers ever seen in the history of deathmatch wrestling. And she doesn't share that opinion with other people. It's just her. But that's how it'll be booked. You know what I mean? So that's that. I just think it's silly as hell. Let me see. What else? Speaking of people in that company, I just want to talk about this real quickly because I just think it's the stupidest fucking thing this cat did. Deshaun Pratt, right? This dude used to be Massis. He was one of the two Osirian Portal. I had had to do it on the show years ago, and I remember asking him why he was doing this, and he kind of said he was reinventing himself, and he wanted to start his own thing, and I said, man, I don't, this shit was so over. That Osirian Portal thing was so over. They were dancing Egyptians. Like, it's not like, man, there's so many dancing Egyptians now. I just had to make my own thing, so I just needed to be some guy from Camden. So he took a gimmick that was, I am a dancing Egyptian to, yeah, I'm just from Camden. Well, guess who's not as popular anymore? Deshaun Pratt. Guess who doesn't have really too many shots on TV right now? Deshaun Pratt. That's why, bro. Like, why would you just decide, I'm going to just be a regular dude from the streets? Because that'll sell better. Oh, yeah, there's only just millions of that in wrestling. Dude just have no gimmick and just show up as whatever the fuck they was born like. That's very, very common in wrestling. There's no dancing Egyptians. But, you know, I mean, do you, man. You don't want to be famous. It's cool. Some people just want to be from Camden. I didn't know that. Previous to this dude, I didn't know anybody wanted to be from fucking Camden until I saw this guy. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what he wants in life. But that's going to be easy to accomplish because, I mean, you can live in fucking Camden. That's not like a difficult to obtain goal. It's hard to keep living in Camden, but I mean, you could fucking go there and get, I'm sure, a pretty good price on an apartment. Swerve Strickland's wearing makeup now. Your thoughts? I don't know. I mean, I have a problem with a dude who's playing super gangster with pink fucking eye makeup around his eyes. I don't know. It could just be me. I mean, I have a problem with a lot of this shit, man. I see a lot of this new rap that just looks like sissy shit to me. And to each their own. But it ain't me, bro. That 90s rap that my old man self listened to, and that type of energy is what I was about. That's what I was like. I mean, and the Diddy shit has always looked crazy. Diddy's always looked like the sissy in the group because he was always dancing around while everybody else was talking about shooting people and shit. He's got a dude holding an umbrella over his head, and the other dude just gave you, like, 8 gum bars and shit. So, yeah, you knew shit was up, and you knew shit was shady with him because, you know, there were so many rumors about what was going on with Biggie dying and what he might have had involvement and all that other stuff and Pac shit. And the whole thing was real, real suspect throughout. And, man, the shit that's coming out with him now is crazy. Crazy, crazy. But, yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of big names are going to fall with that because everybody's at them damn Diddy parties over there. I know my man LeBron was over there, and I'm a LeBron supporter. I don't know the guy. If it was my man, I wouldn't have mortgage problems, but, you know, no Diddy. But I you hope that Jay ain't involved, LeBron ain't involved. We don't need icons falling over this shit, but hey, man, if y'all was up in it, y'all was one of them, and we'll find out, because I think everything's going to come out, you know, no Diddy. It's crazy. Speaking of AEW, too, that thing they did with the footage was ass, man. Like, it's upsetting because to me, look, the CM Punk thing happened. I think they lost out big time on that because CM Punk was a huge, huge draw, whether people like him or not. Either love him or you hate him. He gets huge reactions everywhere he goes, and he was definitely getting those reactions in AEW. So they weren't paying him all that fucking money because he wasn't worth shit, and WWE didn't just take him back because he wasn't worth shit. So I think that whole situation happening in AEW just wasn't good for AEW. But when it happened and it was what it was, CM Punk goes back to the WWE, AEW lands Will Ospreay and fucking Okada. You just go, you know what, like, we just got to move forward. You know, we just got to move forward with this shit. Let's not dwell on the CM Punk shit because, you know, we got some of the biggest stars in the world. Two guys who really a lot of people never thought would sign with a U.S. company, those two. And this is, you know, from a guy who really doesn't have that much excitement about wrestling at all. But when I see, oh, Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson, holy shit. And then you think, like, yo, up top we got Joe as champion. And then you got possible challengers of Okada and Will Ospreay. I want to see those matches. That shit is dope. You know? But dragging his CM Punk shit, rather than focusing on all the positives that's already there, you go like, we're going to show the footage of the CM Punk thing, and the reason why they showed the footage, I don't know if that's the reason why, but the reason they gave to show the footage was because the Young Bucks were using it as a reason why they didn't beat FTR because they think that CM Punk started that shit right before they had their match because he's friends with FTR, and that's why they weren't at their best, and he jeopardized the whole show, and they lost their match, and now they have another match with FTR, so they're going to show that. That's a long way to go for all that, man. Like, y'all really reaching, and it don't look like it's to shit. Like, it doesn't look like there's anything good that you're reaching for. You're just reaching to reach. And I don't really get it. So shit like that turns me off. You know what I mean? Like, as a fan, I just go like, oh, I don't want to watch their next show now. If their next show was Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay, man, I'll check that out. Oh, I hear Joe's going to fight fucking whoever, you know. He's going to fight Tommy End or whatever fuck his name is now, Aleister Black. Oh, shit, let me check that out, you know. But I don't, well, Will Ospreay is going one-on-one with Pac, whatever fuck you call him, big-ass ears. But that's what I want to see, you know. I really don't give a fuck about we're going to drag this CM Punk thing around again. It's just pathetic to me. Tony is a huge, huge mark, which honestly has its pluses and its minuses. I don't want to just say it as everyone else does and goes, ah, Tony's a mark, he's just a fan. He is, but that's why Ring of Honor is still going on. That's why Ring of Honor was even purchased, because he's a fan and wants that shit. It's like action figures. He gets to have all this shit and just play with it. And you can do some silly shit with it, and then you're like, yo, that sucked. But these are just his toys to play with, as far as I'm concerned. And that just to me was tasteless and just didn't have any. Now, like, I think it was fucked up or anything. Like, I don't think it does anything to Punk. Punk already has his job there. They're not going to call him and be like, oh, on second thought, when you get back from that injury, just head to the unemployment line because we saw that AEW video and, we don't like the way that looks. Get out of here, bro. No one gives a shit. Other than the fact that it makes your company look bad, no one cares. So, let me see. The Cody angle, I mean, they pulled it off, and to have people, including people who were in the company, crying when he won it, yeah, did your job. I mean, obviously, it was hugely invested by the fans, by the people, and, I mean, I could just tell you I don't give a shit about it because I don't, but obviously, I'm not saying that as a statement on the angle didn't work or anything like that. That'd be ridiculous. But I'm just not a Cody guy, you know? I think he's a great wrestler. Think like his gimmick and the way that he delivers everything is just like the corniest shit ever to me. You know what I mean? It doesn't have any, there's no cool vibe to me. You know, that big stupid tattoo on his fucking neck. I could not hate a tattoo more than I hate the fucking neck tattoo of the American fucking flag skull fucking whatever the fuck on his neck. Like, Jesus Christ, it's just bad. I think his gear looks like Mickey Mouse at a fucking parade. You know what I mean? Like, his whole shit, I don't like the red, white, and blue is like colors. Like, I'm not a big, you know, I like, obviously my team is red and gold, so, but I like the reds and stuff. Blues I don't like too much, so, you know, like that whole, like, American color looks like the fucking, like, looks like a fucking Buffalo Bills starter jacket and shit. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just not my color palette that I like. You know what I mean? And, again, I mean, it worked. Second night was all right. I wasn't huge on it. I think that was the night that, I don't remember which happened on what night. Maybe, Sami Zayn won the first night. I think he might have won the first night. But the two women's matches on the first night were my favorite thing of the whole weekend. Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair are two of the most talented fucking wrestlers in that company. I mean, they're just incredible. The two of those women give me hope for what professional wrestling for women can be. Yeah, anybody who's listened to this show over the years knows that I am not a huge women's wrestling fan, especially independent women's wrestling. The majority of them need to quit like fucking 3 weeks ago. They're terrible. They're bad wrestlers. They're not, half of them don't even look that great. And then some of them look good but wrestle terrible. And people will keep buying their fucking sock, their ring-worn socks and shit because they're pervs. They're just weirdos and it's just a fetish thing. Just like deathmatch wrestling has turned into a fetish thing. Female, especially female independent wrestling, has always been a fetish thing, and is not my fetish. So I can't go like, yo, that's you know what I mean? Because I don't like it. It's not for me. People who do really slow ring work and moves that have zero impact and just, that's most of women's wrestling. WSU, for the most part, was all of that. And you could take fucking four wrestlers, five wrestlers, and exclude them from that, okay, but you have fucking two tag matches on the show, you have a fucking scramble match, four singles match, and a three-way, and that's a lot more than fucking four wrestlers, you know? So when you're looking at that, five wrestlers, and you're looking at that, and you go, how do we put on a whole fucking show? Terribly, that's how you do. But anyway, these women are fucking fantastic. You know, and I think matches were really good, too. Becky did a great job with what's her name? I just lost her fucking name. Jesus Christ. But she's fantastic. Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley's fantastic. Great presentation. Powerful as a motherfucker. Same thing with Bianca Belair. I think Jade Cargill's going to be good. I don't think she's there yet. I think she's very strong, great look, all of that stuff. Think she knows she needs to learn how to speak and present herself that way, because just like yelling like the way she does, I don't think that's a great look. It just looks like not in control for someone who's so fine as far as like what she does physically. You know what I mean? And then I think her movements overall in the ring are just kind of choppy and not really smooth. She does power moves very well. It's just, I think, like the transition and the moving around and the speed of things don't work as well for her yet. But I think they will. This isn't someone who I think is, like, broken and is never going to be all together. I think she's going to have everything, and she's in the right place to do it now. I think AEW was a huge waste of her time, and they just allowed her to go out there and kind of Bill Goldberg. Oh, you know how to do a spear and a jackhammer? Okay, just do that every week. And they just had her squashing chicks. And she would come out, do her poses, kill chicks, go home. Kill chicks, go home. And it was just, it didn't give her an opportunity to wrestle some of the best and to practice against the best and really work on all the things that she needs to work on and continue to just expand on what she's capable of. Because I think she can do that, and I just don't think she had the opportunity in AEW because she was just given the, what you got's good enough, let's roll with that, let's make money off of it. And I don't think that was best for her career. But she's in the right spot now, so props to her. And, yeah, don't have a ton more to say about WrestleMania type stuff because, again, I'm not that big of a wrestling fan. I don't want to try to pick all matches apart and this and this. You know, like I said, some things are for some people that aren't for me. But when you see a crowd explode, you go, yeah, that just wasn't for me. Tell you it didn't work. What the fuck? Like, these people, and, you know, they still have these fucking, these podcasters that make a lot of fucking money off of wrestling. Just reviewing every show. And they will literally sit on their fucking podcast and tell you, that didn't work for me. I didn't like that. That was complete. That wasn't good. That wasn't. And meanwhile, the crowd is going nuts. So speak for yourself, man. This isn't about you. This is about, you know, you can say how you feel. Make sure you keep it to how you feel. Because this is how I do. It's how I feel. I think Johnny Cashmere is a piece of garbage. I think DJ's a fat piece of shit. Now, part of that is not subjective. But, you know, I think a lot of these things. Willie is embarrassing. You know what I mean? 5XL Generico is a ridiculous gimmick. Stop it. But if everyone else likes it, keep on going. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, that's most of what I got. I got, you know, one positive. I want to leave you with another little story here about positive going on in my life. All right? I think I had mentioned towards the tail end of me doing these on here that I had a cat that was coming to my door every night, and it was really fucking me up because this is so closely tied into what I was dealing with. And seeing this cat living outside and coming to my house and just waiting on the porch for us to feed her, because initially when she came to our house, she was eating the sunflower seeds that I was leaving for the squirrels. And I watched this cat scarfing down a pile of sunflower seeds like she was starving. So from that point on, I'd meet her with, you know, a bowl of cat food. You'd see this little calico out on the lawn. You know, she'd wait till it was dark, and then you could look out there, and we would peek out the curtain. Either me or one of my girls would peek out the curtain. Oh, she's here. And we'd go, and we'd run a bowl out to her. She would stay kind of halfway down the lawn. When we went inside, as soon as that door shut, she'd sprint up to that bowl and she'd eat at a feverish pace. And then when she was done, she'd usually run off, but she'd come back like an hour or two later just to see if more food showed up because she didn't have shit else to do. And I'd see her out there in the rain, and I'd see her out there in the cold, and I'd see her out there in just terrible conditions. And there was days I didn't see her come back, and I'd worry until she came back. And one day I just said, you know, no more, I can't anymore with this. We gotta take her in. Someone dumped this cat. I saw she had a, a little ear tip, which usually means, which, you know, in her case and most cases means that they were fixed somewhere and just thrown back outside. You know, there's such a narrative that's being pushed that these cats that live outside, these quote-unquote ferals, they can't be domesticated, and the best you can do is just put them back. Then I also see pages upon pages, you know, these local pages around here, people will find a dead cat on the road and go, oh, maybe it was just one of the ferals. So you have people who don't think anything of a dead cat if it was just a feral. Yeah, people who would just ignore something that's probably just a feral cat. And then you have shelters who are working overtime to lump more cats into the category of being feral. You know, I battled this battle over and over and over, and it didn't matter. It was such a, it was the definition of gaslighting. You would take months on end to get a cat better, to get a cat where they were friendly, they were outgoing. You had rehabilitated them from a survival life, from the instinct of having to survive and fend for themselves. You've now helped to rehabilitate that cat into a beautiful, sweet house cat. You'll send that cat home. Another cat will come in just like it. Just like it was when it came in, and now someone will come and tell you, you can't just domesticate feral cats. Even after you just finished doing just that. It's like no matter what you do, you're never going to get the credit and they're never going to adjust accordingly as far as what can be done and how often it can be done. It can be done constantly and it could be done by anybody. And that's what I told people a lot. A lot of times people would say, you know, you're the cat whisperer, you're this, you're that. And I've only called myself that a good handful of times, really. I don't like taking credit for all of what I am with cats because I believe everyone can do this. I believe it's my genuine intention. I believe it's my dedication. I don't like to lose. I don't like to give up. So having those things and my genuine intention to better this animal's life and also dedication to not give up allows me to navigate all of the difficulties through this process and get these cats through this. But you know the beautiful thing about it is, so we brought Jazzy in, and you know, we've now had her inside. She's still in the crate. But we brought her in, and she's in the crate, and you know, one of my twins, Crystal, she is working with her. She's going in there and she's petting her. She's petting her. She's petting her. She's petting her. She has taken to Crystal more so than anyone in the house. She's taken to me well, but she's another huge step ahead with Crystal. 14-year-old girl. She's showing amazing confidence and trust and acceptance to a 14-year-old girl that is in there petting her. So now when you tell me that no one on the planet can tame these cats, and I know for a fact that this was a cat that wouldn't let us touch her, and when we brought her in, had no connection with what touching was. She would hiss, and she would kind of just close her eyes and just let it happen. She wasn't aggressive, but she would show, like, I'm scared, and do what you got to do, and then leave me alone. And we've gone from that to this cat mushing her and purring and standing up and starting to show some real confidence. And to me, that's not only is that one of the most beautiful things in the world, but it's proof to everything I've said this whole fucking time. This is not an impossible task. This is not something that only I can do, because that's another thing that's been beaten, that's just been used as a weapon to swing against me over 21 years of being there. Only Jay could touch that cat. Only Jay could touch that cat. And I said, that's ridiculous. I'm the one who happened to dedicate myself to the cat. So, yes, the cat is making more progress with me than your average person who passes by and goes, is that cat friendly yet? Like, you wouldn't know because you didn't dedicate 5 minutes to the cat, let alone the time that I have. So it's not about me being special. It's about me caring. And there's so many cat people out there that if they applied themselves to caring this way, people will take in a cat from the outside. They'll put it in their bathroom, and as it ricochets off the walls and breaks everything in their bathroom and maybe tries to go through the fucking window, they'll go, see, you can't just take a cat in from outside. Well, you did it wrong. You did it completely wrong. You need to start in a dog crate. Set up a litter box, food bowl, bed. We got a like a Heidi bed that's in the shape of a Garfield head that she goes into. And then she comes out. She feels safe. She comes out. You give her a little bit of a hidey place, and then you work that out of their cage. You know, little by little, you work it so they don't need a hiding space. And there's ways to go about this that cats are able to be domesticated. Almost every cat out there can be domesticated, and they just need someone to care about them more than just letting them live outside. Everybody, you know, oh, I tried my best, and there's nothing I could do. Really? How come I haven't had... I've had thousands more cats of experience and thousands less difficulties than the people who have tried it twice. So, well, why isn't it your fault? Why isn't it you doing it wrong? Why isn't it possibly, maybe I didn't have the right system? Instead of, you just can't do it. And I'm going to now tell everybody I know, don't even bother with the feral cats. Like, these people are fucking assholes. And humans, domesticated cats. That's what that is. So when they're a domesticated animal, to just continue to treat them like raccoons that live outside and whatever happens to them happens to them. And, well, what can you do? There's nothing you can do for those cats. Yes, the fuck there is, and humans are opting out of it. And I've seen too much to not know the difference. And like I said, I've seen a child work with a cat that didn't know human touch and watch the cat respond. When no one's saying, hey, 10 days, how much longer is it going to take? Yeah, it's a lot harder to work that way. Yeah, it's a lot harder to get progress when someone's staring at their watch. When someone's staring at the cat and watching their progress on a daily basis and celebrating the steps of progress we make, oh, we could do amazing things. We could do everything everyone said we couldn't. But it doesn't work on a short schedule. It doesn't work on a little bit of time. And it doesn't work when live release is your answer. I just wanted to put out there, hopefully some people can gain some intelligence, not intelligence, but knowledge off of that and reassurance. Shout out to Kevin Scali. I don't know when the last time I've even talked to this cat was, but I do believe I know Kevin through wrestling and through this show, but he had referred a woman to me because he said, yeah, reach out to him because this woman is trying to bring in cats that she's been feeding outside. And because she wants to move in a few years and really wants that situation resolved so she doesn't just leave these cats behind. And I've been walking her through the process. I talked to her for about an hour one night on the phone. And she texts me whenever she needs to. And I helped to walk her through the process of getting these cats inside. And she's done a fantastic job. And I encourage everybody out there to do the same. If you have the space in your home to bring in another cat, we need to start solving these problems on a different level. And, you know, if there's something that you want to help outside of your house, there's probably nobody that's going to be willing to help it more so than you are. Unfortunately, the things that are the closest to us are never going to be cared about nearly as much outside of our actual immediate circle or vision. It's the harsh reality that we deal with these cats. And but if you ever need any guidance on cats, in any way, shape, I'm not a vet, and I can't give you, you know, actual something that's going to save you going to the vet. There's a lot of times people will ask me questions, and I'm going to tell you, you need to take the cat to the vet. I have no shortcuts to eliminate the vet or things like that. But I do have a lot of knowledge as far as cats go, and I would very much help you, you know, if you needed advice on anything. And that's anybody. So just keep that in mind. Try to do some more of these now. Like I said, and that GoFundMe pops up if you guys want to support. I appreciate you. If not, you know, please pass it on to other people who may. Please hit me up with topics or things you want to hear me talk about. And I'm going to try to get on here and do some more and see what goes on. So I hope everybody enjoyed hearing me back on this shit. And where the fuck is my... See? Now we back, right? We looking for outros. We back. All right. I'll talk to y'all motherfuckers later. Peace.
Talk to y'all later. Have a nice night. Stay dry. It's raining again. I'm tired as rain. Makes my grass green. I won't complain about that. That's all I gotta say. I'm outta here.
I love all of y'all and, shit.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes.
You been in the gym, bro.
You know why?
DJ Hyde, fuck you.
You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me.
I'll listen to your podcast and I'll find everything out. You know what I mean?
You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what am I you?
Good. Mike Cheese tells me all the time to listen to what you gotta say because you be blazing people. And I'm like, well, I gotta hear it now.
You just know how to hide it. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell the truth, even when I lie.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Jesus!
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
I'm gonna tell you something straight off the motherfucking press. I ain't coming for no fools.